Hey everyone, I'm here today at Fort Circle Con, actually Circle Con in DC. It's Saturday night. We've all been playing some games. It's been a fun time, but I'm going to let everybody who's here with me actually introduce themselves, because this is different than a normal podcast episode where I'm just talking to a designer. We got a couple of designers and a couple of students who are also designers too, but we'll start on my left with Non-Breaking Space.
Yep. Non-Breaking Space, people call me MB. I am the designer of the game Crossroads Expressway, which is coming out this year. Don't quote me on that, but this year, quote somebody else on that, from GNT Games.
Awesome. I'm Robert Schala. I'm from the Republic of Kosovo, currently a student at Georgetown University doing wargaming with my professor, Sebastian Bay.
My name is Rachel Figger. I'm a wargame designer, and I'm one of Sebastian Bay's mentors and probably a mental student.
My name is Sebastian Bay. I'm a senior game designer at the Center for Naval Analysis. I also teach war game design at Georgetown University.
You're listening to Board Game Games Season 7, Episode 4, where I talk with Sebastian Bay and Non-Breaking Space and two of Sebastian's students at Fort Circle Con. Thanks for listening as we continue to explore the world of tabletop gaming. The thing that I hijacked everybody in here into this little room in this very crowded and noisy convention to talk about is, what is a war game? We don't actually have to define that necessarily, but I'd like each of you to give your definition, maybe, or your defense for what you think a war game is, if you don't want to define it.
Everybody is giving their eyes to me to start this off, and so I'm just going to start it off by not answering the question and putting a thing forth to the table, which is that in order to define a war game, you first have to define what war is and what the limits of war are. Because there are some that would say that war is something specifically inside of the military domain, but others that may say that war is something that can go beyond that scope, and then the discussion of what a war game becomes a little bit broader.
Yeah, I think I would absolutely agree with that statement. Given that I'm designing a war game for Space Command, doing acquisitions, exploring how small companies want to work with the US government but find it very hard and they have to compete with other companies, and so war, in economic war in that sense, maybe.
A lot of the games, I would completely agree. The games that I like and focus on and have designed, I'll focus on influence, so it's that war over opinion, war over party line. Propaganda is a weapon of war, therefore it does go beyond your typical like tactical war. 100%.
Yeah, so for me personally, I have two dual definitions. One as a hobby gamer, right? Someone who enjoys commercial games and plays commercial games, which is more focused on like, if it looks at, you know what I mean, something that relates to conflict, war, and, you know what I mean, the competition ahead of war, right? That's usually how I define war games. Some people define them by mechanics, like Hex Encounter, which I think that's limiting, right? Like Pax Premier or, you know, other games that look at different levels of competition and conflict, right? That are not straight kinetic, you know what I mean, soldiers on a hill, you know what I mean, sort of kind of war games. For work, where I work for the Navy and Marine Corps, our definition is much broader, mainly because it really boils down to, is it relevant to the Department of Defense, right? And the Department of Defense mandate is wide ranging from what Robert mentioned as acquisition, readiness. I've designed games on pilot readiness. I've designed games on foreign military sales that would not typically, in the commercial sense, be designed as a war game. But the Department of Defense is like, this is part of what our mandate is, and often their mission defines what we call a war game.
All right, I'm just going to interject here and say I disagree with all of you. And I'm going to represent the hardcore grogs and say that a war game is about the military and military operations and how they play out. And you're going to be either simulating a real instance of something that happened or something that could happen, utilizing real information and data about the things. That's a war game. Probably has hexes and counters.
And be just like, grenade! No! Boom! He's gonna jump on it.
So, I mean, what? Why is your game getting published by GMT then? What's up with Crossbronze Expressway then?
Well, you also have to recognize that I do have a second game from GMT,
yeah.
which is Solitaire Attack Ops Ortona, which is a real war game, unlike my fake war game, Cross West is West Way.
Are we hearing two voices from me tonight? Okay. Let's go back to this idea of influence. For the hobby gamer, like, what does that mean to assert and use influence within a game in this way that some of you have mentioned?
Mm. I think for a hobby gamer, it really becomes a difference between when you're coming up with plans that can affect everybody else's decisions. That makes there being levels of interaction that can result in conflicting opinions. And that is different from, by example, the more standard definition of a Euro game, where you can sort of do your thing and you may not even have any interaction with everybody else. You just have this sort of shared space in which that's happening. There becomes less interaction, less conflict, and it sort of takes away that level of influence on what other players' decisions are. Though you can also say worker placement can get there as well.
Yeah. Like, I think it really depends on the type of engine. I do think, you know, Robert and I were talking about this over lunch of like, one of the things that, you know, the type of Euros that I don't particularly like is when we're siloed and we're just sort of like, Scythe has a certain element to it. I like Scythe, but mainly thematically, right? But like, I don't like the early portions of Scythe because I feel like I'm just playing by myself. I can leave the table, come back 20 minutes later. I have no effect.
Yep.
Although I do like Scythe, right? That dynamic of it, I think that it could be better. But I think for a lot of war games, it's, you know, part of it, you can define it by theme, right? About military operations and so forth. But I think influence, I think, is a bigger portion of it, at least for me who works in the field, because we cannot deploy to places, where the start line begins for military operations is where influence ended, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know what I mean? When we think about force posture or force design or what army you start the war with, that's about readiness. That's all about economic stuff. That is about influence in the Pacific or Europe, right? Like the Cold War stuff, right? That's why I think when people are always like trash on Jason on Twilight Struggle being a war game or not, I think the argument could go either way depending on really where your strong feelings lie. Mm-hmm. Rachel, influence.
That was very influential.
To say the least. I think that discussion highlights one thing of, like, in DoD level war games, influence is played out on the board in a certain type of way. Typically, if it's going to be part of a game, it is put into the adjudication model in terms of, like, will to fight, how willing is XYZ country to allow you to use them for overflight and things like that. Whereas in hobby gaming, you see in games like Risk and Diplomacy, like the basics, it's that inner human interaction that is the influence of the game. But like in Diplomacy, if you're not a good person, you're gonna lose even if you're Russian.
So I will throw a potential controversial question to the group, which is, what is a game that you think is a war game and a lot of people don't think it is, or the other way around, when people think it is a war game and you think it's not?
Let's come right back to that, because I want a more of a definition. Yeah, let's do that grenade. I have a couple more grenades that I'm thinking about throwing at all of you, but conflict simulation versus war game, what is that? Is there an important distinction or not? Because Jason's the one who was like, oh yeah, my game is conflict simulation. It's not a war game. I'm willing to admit that. That's fine. Is that an important distinction or not? And then we'll go right back to what Sebastian said. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'll go back to that. You know, what is war? And you could, you know, look at someone like Clausewitz would say, yeah, war is a continuation of policy. And then you would look at Mao Zedong, and he would say the opposite. He would say, you know, policy is a continuation of war. And I think. All war games have is conflict, but not necessarily all conflict games are war games, even though I think there is a space where you could take more abstract conflicts, you know, like a will to fight or economic competition, and tie that into to a greater conflict and explore that dynamic of how that works in a war or in a broader conflict like that.
I think in general, conflict simulation and war is just a distinction to satisfy the mainstream board game hobby. Yeah. It's just a categorization to sort of put things into buckets to make them more either accessible or less accessible. But at the end of the day, it's a question of what level of interaction do you want to have about this particular topic, and how much do you want to create the friction between there, you know?
Yeah. So let's go back to Sebastian's question. What is the war game that everyone else is not going to say is a war game that you're like, you know what, this is a war game. I will defend this no matter what. You will have to, you know, throw me out of gaming before I will admit this is not a war game.
I got the answer.
Okay.
I got my answer. Roads and Boats.
I've never played it, so.
Roads and Boats, Splatter's game is probably the most conflict-inducing levels of a logistic game that you can possibly have. And when you get to the expansion, they actually have bombs, but before you get to the expansion, there's no bombs, so you're not actually throwing anything. But you are going in, stealing people's stuff, while trying to build up the resistance that you're building walls, the people that are taking down your walls, all of those things to be able to protect your resources, it's absolutely a war game.
I don't know if I'm qualified to answer this question.
Do you like games?
What? Yes?
You're qualified. Oh, we got that. You are qualified. So what? Yeah, go.
Yes, but I don't have as much hobby gaming experience. And I also think that for it to be a war game, there needs to be some level of conflict.
There needs to be some level of what?
Some level of conflict that is like,
is Scrabble a war game?
No.
Well, there can
it needs to simulate something.
You haven't seen Scrabble.
maybe I haven't seen this game played correctly.
Three words.
It's okay.
Sorry, I'm so
sorry. There is no public space that's perfect for this right now.
Yeah, I'm actually going to do the same thing over on the other side.
Yeah. So. I might leave that in if that's okay. What's your name?
What's that?
What's your name? Can I leave that in?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Oh, so Zilla Blitz is saying he's going to do the exact same thing.
Right.
Mike. Yep. So okay. This will be on the podcast.
Okay. My apologies, sorry.
No, you walked into his. It's right. Funny. It's yeah. Funny because... we're at CircleCon, and we are. There is no good space to record this right now.
I didn't see the mic because it was right behind. Yeah, my apologies.
All good.
See you later, Mike.
I guess I will put mine out there. This is the one that comes up the most for me when I'm in spaces, because I do a lot of conventions and I teach games a lot. It's weird, and I know you're going to have an opinion about this too, but Root, people are like, oh, that's not a war game. Or it is, and they feel very strongly about it, and I feel like, very, very clearly is, and I'm often confused when people are like, why is Root not a war game? So I would 110% defend that one every time when the guys are like, whoa, what war was it? What you mean to say is, what historical event game is this? And they're using the wrong terms as well.
So, yeah. So when people ask me, I defend Root as well to like the death. Is when people are like, what war does it represent? I'm like, Afghanistan.
Mm.
Root based version is just furry Afghanistan in the forest. Right? Because
wait, are you saying that there were furries in Afghanistan?
No comment.
Okay.
On that one.
But there's
right?
A furry Afghanistan.
Right? Where the Marquis the Cat, right, is essentially NATO and the US forces running around trying to like beat up people.
The new power.
Right? The new power, right?
Yep.
The birds, right, with the Erie? No.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. Is essentially the Kabul government that could win the war really well if they stop collapsing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? If they could keep their democracy together, it would be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? The mice are the Taliban, who are sneaky long-term winners, right? Right? Typically. Right? And the raccoon, the vagabond, is Pakistan, who is broken in the first game and wins all the time, right? And history has shown us that is exactly what turned out, right? Marquis the Cat is the fun one to play, but always loses, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The raccoon and the mice are the ones who usually come out on top until Cole fixed the game, right? And I always tell people, like, oh, what war game is like? Afghanistan. Let me explain to you, my friend, right? So that's my also hot take.
I think that's relevant. But I think the truth of it is that Root could easily be applicable to several things because it I think you're right. It is very applicable to that one, but there are some ideological things that are happening with each faction that can we can look and say, oh, this is this for this specific period in time. But do you have one?
I agree with you both on the route, I think.
Oh, that's too easy. No.
I haven't played many games, but Root is one of them, and I've played that here in this con. So for me, it absolutely was a war game. Just because you're playing little furry animals in a forest does not mean it's not brutal. It does a good job of showing some conflict dynamics, different factions, different asymmetries. I would be curious as to, if it's not a war game, then what is it?
So, going back to the dissenting opinion.
Yeah, please do. Let's do it.
Cole, I love you. You're my friend. But the argument against Root as a war game usually boils down to that distinction that we were saying before about the categorization of gaming in the hobby, where in the categorization of the gaming in the hobby, it doesn't fit squarely into the war game, and you have so many dynamics that fit closer to the Euro, where it's like, oh, well, it's just an area control game, and it's just an area control game with some asymmetric powers, da 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 da. You see that sort of across the board, but it's not really a war game because it's not directly about these things.
So, what is... let's take that to, since we have professionals or professionals to be in wargaming, what is area control, or is there a simulacrum, is there something similar that we can talk about? Like, is that even a valid point, or is this just a market category that has been created, or a gatekeeping category that's been created?
I definitely think it's like gate and marketing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, related to that, for the professionals who are doing wargaming, what does area control stuff look like in what you do?
So for us, we rarely define our games professionally by the format, right? Mm-hmm. Some of our games are traditional, right? Like Hex Encounter, what normal hobby people will walk into the door and be like, oh yeah, they're obviously doing war games, right? Other times, they walk into one of our war games and a bunch of uniform guys are over Excel sheets tracking like munitions and stuff, and they'll be like, what the hell, right? Because it's, essentially, they're playing a resource allocation game over Excel, and they hate us for 14 hours a day for 5 days, right?
Yeah.
But for us, we're like, this is what you would literally need to do, right? In a supply company or a brigade or at one of the combatant commands, tracking how many Tomahawk missiles you have left, right? Yeah. For the cool people, you know what I mean? So for me, a lot of times, you know what I mean, is like, what is a war movie came out at the same time, like when I was, you know, in the during the GWAT era, right? Like war movies were like War II, like Saving Private Ryan, right? But then you had other movies about people coming back from the war, right? Is that a war movie, right? Right? And I think it's very similar, right? Is that these boundaries are what we are comfortable with, right? And what we grow up with, right? I grew up on Hex Encounter games, so that's usually how I grew up defining war games. And then you, as you experience more things, that your palette and the colors you paint your gaming, your spectrum with, becomes wider and more vivid and more nuanced, right? Versus just, this is black and this is white, you know what I mean? And now there are things that blend and borrow things, right? I'll tell a quick story. Like, I designed the Toro Commander for the Deeds Foundation, looking at, literally designed for the Marine Corps, for education, looking at China and the U.S. possibly fighting in the Indo-Pacific, right? And one of the board game geek reviews was, this is not a war game, it is just a hand management game or something like that. And I literally screenshotted it because I laughed so hard. I was like, cool, dude, like, great, I don't care, right? Awesome, right?
As it's being used by
professionals. Right? But the thing about that game, and I was talking to Robert at lunch about it, is that I know some people look at the game originally and it's like Hex Encounters, like your traditional things, because I grew up on that. But I also threw in like elements of like F-35s and cyber attacks or cards, because those are easy, accessible ways to do those kind of really things without rules complexity. And some people hated that, and some people loved it, right? Right? And I was like, there's genres are blending and borrowing from each other, making defining games by their core mechanics largely artificial, right? At least that's my hot take.
Yeah, it's a dated thing, you know? And even, like, you could take... The hobby right now is so centered around board game geek in terms of as what the definition of categories are, what the definition of mechanics are, and board game geek, of course, is not the beginning of board games, but it sort of establishes the language that we have. And so it's like, where does this fit? Does this fit here? Does this fit there? Does this fit there? And I think a lot of what designers are doing right now is just like, what's the game that I want to make? And how do I reflect that, right? And if you're doing that, the mechanics don't necessarily matter. It's really what it is that you're trying to convey. If you're trying to convey logistics, then you need to figure out what are the best mechanics for doing that in a way that's going to be communicated to the players. And it doesn't matter what you're utilizing for that. It could be hexes on a map if that's the way that you need to do it, but you want to make sure it's the thing that's going to be able to convey that message to the players.
So, to be controversial, grenade chucker,
okay.
In the group is, do we think votes for women as a warrior? Because you're in Tori.
Do you want me to answer that?
Yeah, the group. I will go around, right? So Tori, she defines it as a war game, and that's what she says it is, right? And Yurmin. And I wanted to, and I think that is the spectrum, right, of games, right? How you define war games in Yurmin. Is votes for women a war game? Is it a historical con sim? Is it, not a war game at all, a strategy game?
I will say that I do think it's a war game, and I think it's a really good example of an influence war game, and how those mechanics can be balanced and built out in a very interesting way, in terms of you have the ability to sway the people, but that means nothing if you don't have Congress. And you can play different actions to, like, move your campaigners and do things like that, and it symbolizes the influence dynamics of such a decision really well. And in that space, yeah, it's a war game.
So I will be the contrarian then, and I say it's not because of the dynamics of the game. I think everything that Rachel said is valid, and this is a bias that I will clearly state is because I am a professional gamer and I work for the Defense Department, right? No, Rachel does too, right? But this is, again, this is maybe a bias she doesn't have, right? Is I have a bias, right? Is that I define it in the sense if you can have all those things, right? But if it's the domestic thing, it doesn't sit in the realm that DoD cares about, I don't define it as a war game, right? If you did the same dynamic and we're like, we're going to do this in Colombia, like your game about Battle for the Ballot, right? Influencing an election, it's not the election portion or you're passing things. It's the fact that it is not in the realm that DoD, in my mind, will do, right? I think it's a great political game, right? It has a, whatever you want to call it, right? But for me, for war game, this is my own bias, right? It's not true for everyone, right? Is that it's like foreign, it is external. Like, this is why mechanically Twilight Struggle makes a war game list for me, because it is Soviet Union versus the US, right? Firmly within the DoD sort of mandate, right? And that's, again, this is how
so
I
wait, look are at you telling me that there is absolutely no preparation for internal conflict in the US?
No, again, right? Like Civil War, right? Stuff like that, right? Right, but then the notion for civil war, right, is that one person is trying to break away from your country and you're using violence, right? And they have technically become an external actor, right?
Yeah, but without getting too deep into it, like,
get too deep into it.
Yeah,
insurgency.
Yeah,
like I think insurgency is an internal.
Yeah, but so this is what
that's where it translates into a deep.
Yeah, but like for example, like would you activate the DoD or would you activate the police force?
Would someone in the patriarchy not say that the suffragettes were an outside force?
No, that's a good question, right? But like, for example, and this is the same thing with Jim Crow stuff, right? With games like, and this is my own personal bias because I worked in DoD, and it's artificial as American, because not all countries define their authorities differently. Like Title 10, waging war for the DoD it has certain implications on authorities, and police authorities and law enforcement authorities are very different for on the other side. So I think, like, hey, with riots, Chicago 68, right? Those are all great games, right? Right? But they all are in the civil side of your society, right? And you can use violence, right? Police, all those things that were terrible, right? But from my perspective, right, is like, and again, it's skewed, right? Is that if it's not under that Title 10 line of authority, right? It's just not, right? Like my IU fishing game, I also don't think it's a war game, right?
So that sounds really going back to that original question of what is war,
yeah.
And that's taking the Department of Defense's definition of war, yeah. Of this is the domain of war here. I guess the thing that I would sort of push back a little bit on maybe is the idea that, like, or the limitations of, yeah, that being war involving nation states.
Yeah.
And so does it require it being a nation state for it to be a war?
So, like, you know what I mean, Labyrinth, right, for, mm-hmm, Volko's game, mm-hmm, involves, you know what I mean, a global war against terrorism, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a nation state, right? I also think you can do, like,
well,
you
global war on terrorism, yeah, not a nation state. Yeah.
Right?
Well,
right. Right, right, right. So, right? And one thing I will say, which is a valid critique of my perspective, right, is that the mandate of what DoD cares about and what is increasingly shoved into its portfolio is growing and growing and growing,
right?
Right? And that line between domestic and foreign policy, from IR and domestic policy, is like blurring increasingly. Rachel has a hot take that she's about to tell me.
We'll, mm-hmm, pick up those indices up.
Come on, Rachel. Tell me I'm wrong.
I already did.
Tell me wrong again.
I did.
Yeah.
I have a maybe an interesting lens, and I just developed this while you were speaking. Is that there's essentially two dynamics, at least in most of the games that I've played. There's the dynamic of coercion and the dynamic of exploitation. And I think, going back to your question for area control, I think area control has a lot to do with coercion more than exploitation. Whereas Euro games or economic games are more exploitative in the sense that you're trying to get as much value from an exploitative space. You're trying to make as much more money, you're trying to get as many resources. Whereas coercion is a little bit different, where you're trying to go into a territory that might be useful for exploitation, but you're actually trying to hold that, you're trying to push others away, you're trying to impose your will with force and violence into a space. Now, that's not to say that coercion can't be abstracted. There might be instances where there is a coercive mechanic, where you are doing area control, really. But those two dynamics seem interesting to analyze games from that perspective, to see what elements are coercion, what elements are exploitation. And I feel like if there's a lot of coercion, it feels like a war game. If there's a lot of exploitation, it feels more like a Euro game or economics or something else.
I've never thought about it that way, but that's interesting.
I do want to go back really quickly to Votes for Women, because I think the question that I pose to that is, what is the importance of being a war game to that game?
Define importance.
Like,
do you mean importance of,
like, why is it important for it to be a war game or to not be a war game?
I think it's important for it to be a war game because it looks at the influence aspect of something. And it's important for it to be a war game because it's a historical scenario where, when you play through the game, what actually happened is not the most likely solution. Mm. You play it, the patriarchy's hand is continuously stacked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really hard to lose as a patriarchy,
mm-hmm,
and that's the way it was in reality. And so when you make an issue like that into a war game, and you make that dynamic part of the historical war game, I think that it feeds a greater discussion in the greater community about what that could be.
So,
does that,
like,
make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense, right? Like, mechanically, right? And this is why I don't find games mechanically, right? It's like, for example, like, when you design a game about presidential elections, right, in the U.S., and can have all those same dynamics, right? Right? But I still wouldn't call that a war game, right? You know what I mean?
Audio just doesn't pick up faces.
Do you just want guns?
So, because we're limited on time, this is the question that I want to end up with. I think this is a great discussion. If you all have time later on, we maybe could do a Zoom call, but I'm not going to expect anything of anybody. So I'm going to put it out there, and you can defend it or not. What is the economic game that you would want to see that is about economic conflict? So I'm going to put that out there. You take that as you will. we can set aside the war game question for a second, but I think it's relevant to what we're talking about related to votes for women and things, because and what you were saying too, but like, because without a doubt though, there is economic conflict.
I mean, right? Corporate espionage.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So there is economic conflict. So tell me, and we'll end here, and I appreciate all your time. This is great discussion. What is the game that you would want to see about economic conflict?
So I'll go first as people stall and think of something. Like, one of my favorite economic games is Container, mm-hmm. right? But I wouldn't call it a war game, right? Like, in its current form, I would not call it a war game. It is an economic game. It's great. But how I would, like, make a war game twist to it is, like, if you're countries and you are trying to use the companies themselves as vehicles of your national agenda, right? As you're, like, you know, sort of how the PRC uses state-owned enterprises, how US can incentivize certain behaviors, right? Like we're trying to do with semiconductors, right? You are now framing as, I have an agenda, these are my tools and mediums in which I am channeling national power, and that power is colliding, and economics is just the means we're doing so, right? But I love Container, would not define it as a war game, but if I could make it into a war game, that's how I would sort of do it, because that is also a portion of how I think of, like, you know what I mean? It does not involve tanks and fighters and so forth all the time. I think it is often, you know what I mean? This is my own bias of how I sort things of domestic and international.
Oh, you have to be part of the discussion now.
Sure.
But now we are on, Rachel's going to give her answer on the economic conflict game that she wants to see, and then you're up next.
Awesome.
I want to see a game that models out sanctioned economies in terms of how many countries do you sanction before a sanction is useless, because they create their entire back network. So if you have an East versus West, if we sanction the entire East, if they have the resources to enable themselves, as long as, if the West sanctions the East, if the East has all of the resources necessary to continue to function, sanctions don't matter anymore. Like, practically all your people still have bread, no one's gonna be angry. And I wanna see that modeled out in a war game for a game, I think that'd be sick.
Yeah.
And I also think we over-rely on sanctions and it show that.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim, you're up because I'm forcing you to answer the question. What economic conflict game do you want to see?
Economic conflict game. I guess I would like to see, for me, when I think of some of the aspects of economics I'm looking at, is also like personnel. Mm. So, like right now, Russia, Ukraine, one of the big questions that's not on the battlefield is how long can they sustain the fight? How long, not necessarily the economies with sanctions and whatnot, but one of the big questions is how many personnel can they keep pushing onto the battlefield? And both of them are struggling with that. Both of them don't know the answer to that themselves, and they're just hoping that they can sustain themselves. So a game that would, like, maybe have that aspect in there, like, you want to keep a struggle going, but you don't know. It's kind of a combination of the will of the people and or their ability to go immobilize people. I mean, that was the whole point behind how World War I started, was that question about how mobilization was going to work and what their theories were with that, is that if you start mobilizing and one starts, then everyone has to start, and it's like, it's a machine that can't stop. So that whole mobilization piece, I think, is kind of interesting to take a look at. That would be, I know it's not quite, there's not dollar signs necessarily, but it is a part that's going to keep the economy going.
I'm not starting that conversation, except what is economics?
So in the 90s, I was born, and my parents, you know, they were born and we lived in former Yugoslavia. I was born in the Republic of Kosovo at the time, now Republic of Kosovo. And one interesting dynamic is related to sanctions and not being able to do commerce. My parents were all fired, and my family members, from state-owned enterprises. And so they had to become capitalists, essentially smugglers, because you weren't allowed to even do commerce, right? And so, to me, I would love to see a game of where I can play as a smuggler, trying to make a living, but also kind of bring in weapons and money for an insurgency force. I think that would be really cool to play.
And that happens every insurgency.
So this is a topic that's kind of dear to me, because I've been working on a system of games for a while, which are all around interdependence. And I think interdependence is one of those topics where economics is really at the core of it, but you see the other aspects, it brings in all of the other domains to sort of maintain it. And so being able to just really, how do you reflect the fact that this hotspot that's happening here really puts a strain on the economics over here, which is things that we've seen, by example, when with the Ukraine invasion, it put this strain on the global oil trade. And that it's an economic influence or economic impact that just goes all over the place because of this other action. And so being able to model the way that these things external to the network can strain the network to create economic effects that go.
Cool. Thank you so much, everybody. I really appreciate your time. Hope you enjoy the rest of Fort Circle.
Oh wait, you forgot the answer for what a war game is, and that's a game that has the potential for violence. I mean, everybody knows that. So
You missed a lot of discussion already.
So I will say one last thing is that I think broadly, like, I think we broadly agree that it doesn't matter, right? Like, it's a personal choice. No, like, I think it's a war game. You don't think it's a war game. I don't. It doesn't ultimately matter, right? I think the conflict often starts in our community about what is a war game and what isn't. It's when we force other people to align with our paradigm, right? Like, I understand not all hobby gamers will agree with me, and that's fine because I have a very unique perspective from my own biases of working in my industry, which overlaps, right? But other people who are hobby gamers, they may be, you know, inherit that definition from their dad or whatever, and that's okay. Like, I don't care. It doesn't affect my view of the world, right? I think that's fundamentally, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. To find out how many people's dads tell them what a war game is. Son, this is what a war game is.
We spent a whole Sunday evening on it.
Implicitly.
Don't let anyone tell you any different.
It's a cultural passed on thing, right? But okay. on that note, yeah, because I don't know, you probably, none of you have listened to the podcast, but like, my goal actually is, my goal is to say we don't need these arbitrary definitions. Let's bring more people into the hobby. And guess what, everybody? You don't actually have to buy a game. You can borrow mine or somebody else's or come play with people. Let's interact more. Let's have more discussions. Let's become better human beings. That's, I think, part of the point of gaming. And that's what this conversation was about to me, not about defining these things. So that we can grow as people. So, again, thank you all for being part of this discussion, and hopefully we'll see you next year.
You just listened to Board Game Games Season 7, Episode 4, where I talked with Sebastian Bay, Rachel, Robert, and Non-Breaking Space about what is a war game and deconstructed that a little bit. Thanks for listening as we continue to explore the world of tabletop gaming.